Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
We're talking about cannabis and equity today. It's part two of a conversation, and in part one, you might remember hearing from Mary Boyd, a participant in the Massachusetts Social Equity Program.
If I could take pictures and show you all of the folders, the stuff that I've been writing down, and the steps I've been taking to try to get through this program, you would not believe it. I've done so much. I've been to conventions, you know, trying to get information, trying to find things that I could use that's going to help my business. What's the purpose when I can't even find a place? I live here and I can't find a place where I live.
As a trainee, Mary was underscoring the challenge of even finding affordable space for a business. So then we asked Ty Gomes, CEO of Greenlight Business Solutions, which is a company that runs training in the social equity program, how to fix it. And he said this.
I don't know that it needs to be fixed. I'll say this, that a social equity program is not going to get every single person that qualifies across the finish line. This industry is very, very challenging. You have to have a stick-to-itiveness about you. If somebody like Tito is telling you that it's one of the most challenging things he's ever done, please understand that your lane might not be to be a business owner. You might want to get a job in the industry first and learn some things. You might want to forge some relationships before you open your cannabis business.
Tito, that he's referring to there, was in the conversation last week. That's Tito Jackson, who's a former Boston City Councilor, now CEO of Apex Noir Cannabis, which is opening soon in Faneuil Hall. And we're going to pick it up there asking, you know, should it be that way? And let's say you do make it over the startup hump. Are we getting equity right then? Tito, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have with you, and we'll turn to you, Dennis, in a moment, Dennis Bassan, who is CEO of Western Front Adult Use Cannabis with locations in Cambridge and Chelsea. Dennis, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Tito, you and Ty know each other. You have good respect, but you were shaking your head vigorously last week when Ty was saying that. So pick it up there.
Well, my feeling is folks who are from areas of disproportionate impact, meaning neighborhoods where the cannabis industry actually started. Let's also understand this is one industry that is not new, right? It just simply got legalized. So there are many individuals who participated in the legacy industry who are really the individuals who were quote-unquote early adopters. So those folks actually know how to sell cannabis. And in fact, in my company, we hold 20% of our jobs for individuals who have a Corey, because those are actually transferable skills. And I can't be that when things were quote-unquote illegal that folks were able to excel, and now that things are quote-unquote legal, that there is some type of there are these barriers there. And so only 2% of owners in the cannabis industry are Black.
So, sorry.
And we have to fix that. And so we... One, as people who are actually in the industry, have to help others, and I'm very happy. There are many people that I've been able to help. A young man named Shayun, he has a company called Elevate. We have a mother-daughter organization called Boston Gardener. Shout out to them, Renata and Eve. I've been able to help those folks. And so the other piece is we actually have to put individuals on our shoulders and actually make sure that we don't do as these other organizations, a lot of the large multi-state operators who are actually locking people out. And it can't be that those who got locked up are locked out of this industry.
So just for listeners, Corey refers to the searchable criminal background check that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts uses. So Dennis, I'll turn to you. You know, I'm not going to ask you a question. I'm just going to let you pick up where Tito just left off.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your show this morning. You know, in any industry in this country, there are inequalities. There are disparities. We are underrepresented pretty much in every sector of our economy, and cannabis is no different. Back in 2018, about 122 economic empowerment applicants were certified. There are less than 25 of us up and running here in Massachusetts, and that number also includes social equity applicants as well. And so this is an incredibly difficult and challenging business to get into. And one aspect of it is the access to the arena. And the other aspect is the challenges that you face once you're open.
And that's you.
And that's us. And so we're currently, the Western Front is operating a store in Chelsea that we opened up about 2 years ago. And we recently opened up in Central Square in Cambridge. And we have a third store that's going to 98 Winthrop Street in Harvard Square. And hopefully we'll make the docket this month for a provisional license. But it's an incredibly challenging industry. If you look at the numbers of employees and staff throughout the state, about 70% are white. Only about 16 to 17% are Black and Latino in terms of registered marijuana agents in the state of Massachusetts. A big burden for hiring people of color really falls on economic empowerment applicants. So our staff, for example, is 90% Black and Latino. We have about 50% female staff. Our company is led by a Latina female Navy vet. And so one of the greatest benefits of the program is encouraging us to hire people of Black and Latino descent. The biggest challenge that we face is in terms of taxes, really in terms of covering debt for infrastructure and build out and improvements. And so we've got the state has to hear more from us about the challenges that we're currently facing and really survey the economic empowerment program. To create some changes, including allowing us to have access to the social equity fund that was recently created as part of the marijuana reform bill, but really understand what is happening on the ground. And I think that we're doing ourselves a disservice as policymakers by not listening or at least hearing about the challenges that those of us that are now open are facing in the industry.
So we're talking to Dennis Benson and Tito Jackson in part two of our conversation about cannabis and equity. So bear with me for a minute because I want to educate listeners on three things you said, and I'll be fast, right? We have the social equity program and the economic empowerment licenses. They go hand in hand in helping create opportunities for those who were disproportionately impacted by previous cannabis policies to take advantage of the industry. Social equity, a program, that's a training thing. Economic empowerment is licenses. So they're similar and there are similar criteria, but for everybody to understand, we're talking about getting ready to get a license and then we're talking about getting a license. All right, now I want to get to the third thing because Dennis, I'm glad you brought up this question of who the employees are and what business. Tito, when the ballot measure was passed, November 2016, it was controversial. So at about 54% of people said, yes, legalize recreational use marijuana. About 46% said no. And I could imagine a 46% are listening and saying, I didn't want this in the first place. I want it to be hard. But I think the key issue here is it's hard for the people that we said we were going to get it right for. Not for everybody. It's working. It's just not working for the part that Massachusetts said it was going to do differently.
Exactly. So as Dennis brought up, the panacea, so a couple pieces around the social equity and economic empowerment programs, I analogize those to being able to get entrance into the door, right? But what Dennis is bringing up, and I have a lot of sneakerhead friends, right? So like say if they're going to drop a brand new sneaker at Nike's, right? At Nike. This is actually Nike allowing you to get into the store. But the big issue is you don't have the money to buy the actual sneaker. So we're talking about between $1 and $1.5 million of cash that you can't go to the bank and get.
Because it's federally illegal.
Federally illegal. You have to find a landlord who actually owns a building without a mortgage. And that is critical because mortgages are FDIC insured. And so therefore, it's
federal.
Federal, right? So it's a subset of a subset. But then you're a great individual. Dennis is a lawyer. He's a former city councilor. He has other businesses. But then once you open, you have a high 30s to up to 50% tax burden at the federal level. You have another 20% at the state, and they did make a change to deal with what we call our 280E burden, which is the tax code that we're under. So the other piece is it is also not guaranteed that you're going to make a boatload of cash once you get in. So one of the things that we've seen other states do is actually have funds that help folks like Dennis and I that are now going to be coming online. We think there's going to be between $10 and $15 million.
And that's the Social Equity Fund, Dennis, that you made reference to, that was passed, signed into law in August, designed to start to supplement the challenge that we've been hearing for years now as the industry has developed here in the Commonwealth, which is access to capital, access to money is a differentiating factor for people of color who are trying to get into this business.
Correct. And it's not just this industry. We see it in the liquor industry, correct? We're underrepresented both in terms of liquor licensing and restaurants and other establishments. But I think that, you know, something can be done about this. And I think it starts with the people in the state of Massachusetts where, you know, for the past 7 years, it was a spectacular effort to bring attention to the issues in communities of color, right? And I think that besides that effort, we've got to be conscious about where we spend our dollars. And so the people that are customers here in Massachusetts can make a difference by consciously going to stores like Western Front and Yamba Mock and Pure Aces and the place that Tito's going to be open in Faneuil Hall and spending their dollars there. Because over $120 million is spent a month on cannabis sales in Massachusetts. And so that could make a significant difference. And secondly, there's got to be an exit strategy for economic empowerment applicants and social equity applicants. And that exit strategy could be after, you know, a certain number of years, we would be permitted to partner up with other companies that can help capitalize us and help, you know, move us forward. Currently, we're permitted three recreational locations and one cultivation. Cultivation is cost prohibitive, which is why this is very similar to a marathon where, you know, 6 years ago, the start gun was shot, but we didn't get to enter the race till a month later.
So I want to pause you there for two things. And Dennis, I'm going to ask you a follow-up question, then Tito, I'm going to come back to you. So first, the pause. You mentioned Yamba Market. You mentioned Pure Oasis. Just for people, Yamba is in Cambridge. Pure Oasis is in Grove Hall. We're speaking with Tito Jackson, who will be opening in Faneuil Hall, and Dennis Benson, who has locations in Chelsea and Cambridge of Western Front Adult Use Cannabis.
Correct.
I want to key in on this idea of the limitations being an economic empowerment licensee places on selling. We have a business culture in the United States that celebrates the exit, right? That says you start the business, you get it going, you grow it, you make a ton of money, you sell out, you get rich, and then you are a titan of industry. And what you're saying is even if you can get over the front humps, Dennis, you can't participate in the back end that we celebrate in our business culture in America.
Correct. And so there are two aspects to this. There's the state aspect and there's the local aspect. So at the state level, you have to meet three of six criteria in order to be an economic empowerment applicant. And one of those criteria is that you have to maintain majority-minority ownership. And so any transfer of ownership has to be approved by the CCC. But more importantly, the company would have to be, let's say, purchased by minority-controlled and owned entity.
Who would need to have enough cash.
Correct. And in the state where the average a net worth of people of color is around $8, that's incredibly difficult to do. The second piece is that a lot of the zoning, particularly in Cambridge and Chelsea, is very restrictive. So your special permit is subject to being an economic empowerment applicant or social equity program participant. And so any transfer of license would effectively cause you to go out of business.
Got it.
And so those changes need to be made because I think that it's laudable that we want more participation. But at some point after 3 to 5 years when, you know, your investors are, you know, raising their arms and saying, hey, I've got to get a return on my on what I expected to get, then, you know, it becomes a problem. And so we've got to really take a close look at this. And I think that we are capable both at the state level and at the local level to do that. But I also believe that the policymakers have to take more time to listen to those of us that are currently in business and hear our testimony so that they can make changes that could really benefit economic empowerment applicants and really survey the program as we go forward.
So Tito Jackson, as we're unfolding this, you have and realizing all these obstacles, you have this look on your face like, welcome to the party, I saved you a seat, right? You're a little late, but that's okay.
Come on in.
Bring us to solutions now, Tito.
So one solution is what Dennis just brought up, having what we would refer to in the political space as a sunset clause that would allow individuals an opportunity to exit at some point. And why does that matter? The underlying objective here was not only to allow us to get into the cannabis industry, but the real objective is to build wealth. To close the wealth gap.
And that was expressed. I mean, that was expressed during the debates about legalizing recreational cannabis.
So that is that. If that is the real objective, we can't only have a company. Cresco just came and bought some folks. Juicy just came in and bought some folks. And these are exits of over $100 million. Dennis already does a bunch of stuff in his neighborhood and community. I've been known to give out a turkey or 4,000 to, you know, bring folks together in our community. Imagine if we had that scale of being able to make impact. So that's one critical component. The other piece, what that would also do is the other piece that Dennis and I and others would, you know, Kobe and folks
Kobe's
at Yamba,
Pure Oasis.
And Leah some more and all those, you know, we would also set up our own fund to open the doors of economic opportunity for those people who are coming along after us. Because by the way,
you'd build the angel network.
That's actually how then we would have black VC networks, black private equity or networks that would actually naturally do some of the things that are there. In addition, we do have some fixes that need to be made in the delivery space. There's a requirement now for two drivers. That there needs to be a modification. The Amazon truck has well over $10,000 worth of stuff. In addition, neither one of those drivers is actually armed or the like. So there should be one driver. Or if there is going to be two drivers, you should actually be able to have on-the-go order fulfillment that actually happens in the truck. And then we also should be very innovative in the way that we implement the social consumption lounges. We have a very cool food network in the city of Boston and Cambridge and the like. And so we should not only limit it to consumption lounges, but people should be able to consume on site through meals, which I think would be an innovation that should occur.
So I'm going to give you last word, Dennis, but I'm just going to clarify a couple things Tito said. One, delivery drivers, the requirement now is two people in the vehicle, and those who have begun to test that out are finding that that structure simply can't be profitable. Second, social consumption sites are the next new frontier that we're beginning to put in place. Tito, your business will include social consumption at Faneuil Hall. Okay, so last word to you, Dennis Benson.
Thank you. So we all can agree that regulatory change takes a lot of time, but we can change the industry tomorrow if consumers change their buying behavior. And I encourage consumers to shop with economic empowerment applicants at stores that are in the greater Boston area, because that increases revenue, and revenue obviously increases our ability to stay in business and to operate. And so we have a slogan where we say, change the culture, shop with us. And that means that we are encouraging you to be intentional about where you shop. Don't just say that we want to see improvements in our neighborhoods, but actually take action and spend your dollars where it means something.
All right. Dennis Benson is CEO of Western Front Adult Use Cannabis with current locations in Chelsea and Cambridge. Tito Jackson is CEO of Apex Noir Cannabis, which is opening soon in Faneuil Hall. This was part two of our conversation on equity in cannabis. I learned a ton again today.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Thank
we can
you
all
so
rise
much.
Together.
Thank
That's
you, Tiziana.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.